is the March meeting of the County Health Commission. I'd like to welcome everybody who's here in the audience. And the first order of business will be the approval of the minutes of our last meeting. Are there any changes, additions, or corrections to the meeting, to the minutes as published? There being none, I'll accept the motion to approve the minutes.
Move to approve the minutes.
Second?
Second.
There being no objection, the minutes will stand as approved. Next is the public comment period, and anyone wishing to make a comment regarding something that is not on the agenda this evening may do so for 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record.
Okay. Good evening, board members. My name is Christina Bennett, and I am here on behalf of Slow Code Pink. We are a group of women and men, over 500 strong, united in our dedication to help end this illegal war in Iraq and to redirect those resources into healthcare, education, environmental responsibility, and other life-affirming activities. The United States has already spent approximately $500 billion on this war. The state of California has spent approximately $19.7 billion, and San Luis Obispo County alone has paid out $58 million. As you know, the federal government is now dramatically cutting funding for domestic programs, expecting states and local government to pick up the pieces. The state of California has to cut $14.5 billion, and here in SLO County, I understand we're currently about $18 million short in our budget. It seems obvious that war spending and these deep domestic budget cuts are in direct relationship to one another. To make it more tangible, imagine what we could have purchased with the $58 million sucked out of our own county. We could have provided 23,883 people with health care, or 21,691 children with health care, or provided 6,941 Head Start places for children, 833 elementary school teacher salaries, or 1,037 public safety officers. As I understand it, even right now on this Health Commission board, you're being forced to consider potential reductions in mental health and drug and alcohol services, as well as resources for managing communicable diseases, among other things. We're here today to raise awareness of this direct relationship between the current war spending and our health service funding, and also to ask your board to please support SLO County in taking action join Alameda and Marin counties and another dozen California cities in formally proclaiming our opposition to this war. As a county, our voice is stronger in telling the federal government to end the war and asking them to put the money back into our communities where it is so desperately needed. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next.
I'm Eric Greening, and I seem to be going through a color phase here. I'm wearing a pink accent in support of the message you're getting from my pink friends here. I didn't realize they were all going to be here, but what they say is very true and very serious. History proves that extending into an empire ultimately hollows out the center. And you are in the midst of dealing with some of the consequences of that hollowing out. And we're here making our pink statements because we believe it's not too late to bring the resources and the energy back where we can help each other face to face and be a community. I wasn't expecting to address this particular issue, but I had to say that. The main thing I actually came to bring to your attention is that our county has adopted a lobbying platform, and it's going to be adding to it tomorrow with a letter to Governor Schwarzenegger relative to protesting the closing of 7 of our state parks. It's got some good things in its lobbying platform, support for anti-obesity efforts, of which keeping the state parks open is part. But there is still a missing ingredient, and it may be something, actually several missing ingredients, but the one that I will focus on right now is electromagnetic fields and exposure thereto. Our county planning commission last Friday, the previous Friday, the 28th of February, had an all-morning study session on cell tower sites and what they can do relative to permitting, conditioning, etc. And, of course, the discouraging news is that there is federal preemption of essentially denying any cell tower site based on public health issues or concerns, even though there is rising evidence that there are significant health concerns, even though many other countries have health-based exposure limits in the realm of 1/50th or 1/60th of what our federal government permits. What our federal government permits and forbids any state or local jurisdiction from being more protective than. So I think it's essential that our Board of Supervisors add to their lobbying platform a strong protest of the federal government's preemption of this ability of local government to protect the health of our citizens. I strongly recommend that you listen to the first couple of hours of the videotape, thanks to AGP Video, of the Planning Commission February 28th meeting. I also urge you to Google the name Cindy Sage or Sage EMF Design. She was the presenter who had the most information on health impacts and what we can do, at least by way of information, if not outright protection. And I urge you to hold a study session, invite her and any health-related presenters she recommends, and start getting up to speed on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next.
Hi, my name is Michelle Garreau, and I am a co-director for the San Luis Obispo chapter of Healthcare for All, and we are a group dedicated to bringing single-payer universal health care to all Californians. We support SB 840, Sheila Kuhl's legislation, and just wanted to make you aware that we hold monthly meetings, or actually every other month, third Wednesday, 6 p.m., at Coast National Bank, and our next meeting is going to be March 19th, and we will be showing SICO the next day on March 20th at the San Luis Obispo County Library. Free to anybody in the public at 7 p.m.
Thank you for your information. Is there anyone else who would like to make a comment? Mr. Hamm.
Thank you, Jeff Hamm, Health Agency Director. Just want to take a moment to introduce Dr. Craig McMillan, our interim county health officer, to the commission. Dr. McMillan has been gracious enough to agree to cover for us for the period of time between Dr. Thomas's resignation and us finding a permanent replacement. So, been here a month and a half, how long has it? And it'll probably be a couple more months. So, just wanted to introduce him.
Welcome. We're very glad you're here. Thank you, and thank you for coming to the meeting tonight. All right. Then, there being no further public comment, we'll move on to the first item on our agenda, which is a report on the Ill Flow Obesity Prevention Task Force. And Angel Graham, our health education specialist, is here to give us that report. Welcome, Angel.
Good evening to all. Again, my name is Angel Graham, and I'm a health education specialist working for the San Luis Obispo County Public Health Department. And I have the honor of sharing some updated information, and I'm aware that the commission has been very supportive in the past for the efforts of the task force and Heal Flow. So I'm just going to bring you up to snuff on the last few months at least. I've been here since December. There was a meeting this past January on the 8th, 2008, and it brought together all different members of the community, past task force members, Heal Flow members, work group members from physical activity nutrition, the Oceano Health Community Group, and they have voted to make Heal Flow, or Healthy Eating, Active Living, San Luis Obispo County, the lead organization. So that's, everything's going to be under the umbrella of Heal Flow as far as education, prevention for childhood obesity, awareness, and wellness programs for the county. Heal Slow umbrella, and that'll be kind of like the hub of a wheel, if you will. So the coordinating committee is going to have representation from the different groups, the different work groups, along with representation from a hospital, either administrative or staff, a FENCAL representative, hopefully someone from the medical society, superintendent of schools we're trying to get, FENCAL rep, health officer, when we get someone who's on a more permanent basis, hopefully. And there'll be a facilitator, and I'll be attending also at the coordinating committee. And what the coordinating committee will then do is go back to each of the subgroups and report so that all the members don't have to attend. And we haven't, I haven't quite put together all the coordinating committee members that have agreed to attend. So instead of it being mid to late March, we're looking at the first meeting to start possibly the first week of April. As far as task force group, work groups, I just wanted to bring you up to speed on some of the things they've been working on. Nutrition, physical activity, those groups combined sometime last year. So they meet together monthly. And some of the things they've been working on is a toolkit for MDs, school nurses, and counselors, more of a community toolkit that can be used. And they've also created a survey to send out to MDs just to see what they would like to have put into that toolkit. The brochure that was shared, hopefully you got a copy from Jean, a walking RX or a trail prescription was created by families of Cisco County Parks and Rec, and they're being distributed through YMCA, and we've been delivering them to different medical offices throughout the county. So hopefully when doctors come across patients and they could benefit from a walking prescription, it's a general brochure, tells them what to wear, basically drink water, good walking shoes, and depending on where they are in the county, the little insert is specific if you're in San Luis Obispo or the North Coast or the South, where to walk, what the trails are, how difficult, the distance, and there's also phone numbers. And the very back of the brochure has the website for the Parks and Rec, so you can look up the trails if you need additional information. So those are great. And I've been fortunate enough to be passing some of them out, and they've been well received. They're also nutrition and physical activity. Last year, every October is Walk to School Day. This year it's October 8, 2008. So physical activity and nutrition group also would like to increase the participation. They had some participation last year, but the goal is to spread it out throughout the county and get more schools involved. Under community mobilization, from the title that you can see, information out to the community is their big goal. They met recently this last month with Cal Poly's Perspective PR group, both the director and some of the students. So they're going to assist with making the branding and the logo for Heal Slow, the new lead organization, and possibly also to be included on a website and maybe some other forms of online communication, podcasting and things like that. So they're pretty exciting. This quarter is coming to a close, so they're looking to put more effort into it next quarter. Starts in April. They also just, the mobilization group really is looking to forge strong relationships with the media. Most recently, I know Sarah Arnquist from the Tribune has run some articles related to the walking prescriptions and some other things, so they're really going to try and maintain that relationship and get continued coverage for different activities and events that are going to be going on throughout the county. And ultimately, the goal, of course, is to affect public policy and change. So hopefully that's something we'll get your continued support with.
Medical Site Council. They're kind of the oversight body with the school district, particularly in the elementary and junior high schools. And I know I was on it in Cambria some years ago, and that was, we did a survey with the parents, and that was their biggest concern, was the nutritional value of the school lunches. And we spent over a year really looking at that and surveying the kids and everyone else. And the statistics in the paper this weekend showed that Cambria has a very high percentage, in fact, the highest percentage of Latino students in their elementary and junior high school. It's about 51%, and I believe it's the highest in the county. And you might want to look at that. It would be a nice little pilot project. We were able to make some changes then. We couldn't make a lot of changes with the staff, but we did implement some changes at that time because we worked with the school board. But the school site council is really there as an advisory body, and you know, they're the parents that are there in the district. And yes. Yeah, so I would suggest that that might be a good place to go.
They're only at the up to the junior high level, or they go to high school?
They're high school too. And I'm not sure if the 51% is, it hadn't been 51% of the high school students, but it has been K-8. So I would suggest it's a nice small district and a place to do a pilot, and might be something you could look at.
Thank you very much for this presentation. We appreciate the hard work that you're doing.
Well, a lot of this hard work was already done. I'm just the fortunate one that gets to share it right now, but hopefully we'll get a lot more done.
Well, we're really glad that we have you. Thank you. Since I was going to do this under my chair report, but I serve on the Community Mobilization Committee, and I was going to give a quick update. I might as well do it now since we're thinking obesity, and just a couple things that Angel already mentioned, more or less what the committee is doing. But we did have a meeting on the 19th, and we appointed a member, which is going to be Michael Framberger, with the backup of Julian. Julian's last name?
Barella.
Yes. Julian is going to be the alternate.
For the coordinating committee.
I'm also, I'm not sure who to address this to, but I believe that the Health Commission should have a member on that coordinating committee. And that, I've mentioned it, but it's not been formalized at all. Community Mobilization Committee actually has a lot of, the members have a lot of different programs going on, which they reported on. And so there's just a tremendous amount of activity in the community, and it's wonderful that it's all coming together under the one umbrella of Heal Flow. And then next Tuesday, the PR Spectives group will be meeting with us to work on the plans for our public campaign. So that's the end of my part of the report.
Great. So they are going to, that's the second meeting's been set up. That's great.
Yes, it will be next Tuesday. I just got an email today. So that they'll be the new students into the new quarter, I presume.
Exciting. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Is there any public comment on this subject? All right. Then we'll move to the next item on the agenda, and that is the presentation. Now, we're not screening the entire film because it is copyrighted or cannot be shown on public TV because of their copyright rules. However, Dr. Thomas is with us, a person who's totally unknown to this commission, and he will introduce the film, Unnatural Causes of Inequality Making Us Sick. Welcome, Dr. Thomas.
Thank you. it's a pleasure to be here tonight. I'm loving my new job, taking care of patients. I miss taking care of patients. I miss some of the larger prevention issues that are population-based, and this is a series that's coming up called Unnatural Causes, Is Inequality Making Us Sick? And it really is looking at what are some of the society at various aspects of this, but, you know, it raises the question, are people dying of unnatural causes? We hear people say, oh yeah, he died of natural causes. Well, is diabetes, dying of diabetes, is that called dying of natural causes or unnatural causes? They have one of the programs called Bad Sugar, and it is about diabetes, particularly in the Southwest. So we know what the primary causes of death. We have great statistics showing, you know, cardiovascular disease and stroke, cancer, but what are some of the modifiable factors? And we always say, you know, well, smoking, you know, we just get people to stop smoking, you know, there'd be less cancer. There are a lot of other causes, and certainly, yes, we absolutely need to work on getting people to stop smoking, but we need to look at why do people smoke? Why do people drink? Not only the physical, but the metaphysical, the socioeconomic reasons. Some of the other programs, as I said, Bad Sugar is the one on diabetes. They have one on income, and it's direct impact on health. What happens when you don't have health insurance? So this series will start on April 6th on KCET. The PBS has the exclusive broadcasting rights for doing that. However, you can also purchase DVDs for use in universities and high schools and also nonprofits to be able to have community dialogues. I think that each one of the DVDs, if you're a governmental entity or a public high school or a college, they're over $100 per DVD. I think if you are a nonprofit, then it's $69, maybe even $49 if you buy six of them, the full set. I'd just like to have us look at 10 minutes of the one called Place Matters. It matters where you live. And then at the end of the Health Commission meeting, we'll have the opportunity to look at the rest of the program on Place Matters. Does it matter where you live? What's its impact on your health? So, Bob, if you take it away, we'll screen it, and then if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take any questions.
If you lived here, you'd be 30% more likely to live into old age than if you lived here. If you lived in this neighborhood, your child would be 6 times more likely to be hospitalized for asthma than if you lived in this neighborhood. Why is your street address and the place you live such a good predictor of your health?
Place matters. That's where someone works, where they go to school, or where they live, because place determines what someone's exposed to in terms of a whole host of factors that can affect their health. So place matters because it determines what kind of physical or chemical agents you might be exposed to. It matters what kind of social environment you're exposed to. It matters if there's a lot of violence or crime in your neighborhood. It matters if it's easy to go for a walk in your neighborhood or find healthy foods. Who your neighbors are and the way you interact with your neighbors can also affect your health. So place ultimately is a critical determinant of health.
When we think about health, we usually think about health care and access to care and the quality of care. But what research clearly shows is that health is embedded in the larger conditions in which we live and work. So the quality of housing and the quality of neighborhood have dramatic effects on health.
How do we make an unhealthy neighborhood healthy? Here are two neighborhoods working to find answers. One in Richmond in Northern California and another in Seattle, Washington. Two neighborhoods with similar problems. Today in High Point, in West Seattle, there is quality, low-cost housing, clean parks, safe streets, access to good food choices, and sidewalks that allow lots of social interaction. These features promote health in High Point, but they're not found in many low-income neighborhoods. Meet Guy Bunkert, age 49. A refugee from Laos, he moved to Richmond, California in 1980. He works as a school janitor.
The heart is still weak, and I would find it hard to believe that you would be able to go back to work and work a full day right now. So each time the heart beats, 15 or 20% of the blood is leaving the heart. Mm-hmm. Normal is 60%.
60%?
Yeah, so it's working about a third of a normal heart.
Oh, okay.
2 weeks ago, Guy suffered a major heart attack. This is his first checkup since emergency surgery.
How long will I live?
His cardiologist doesn't pull punches.
That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, you essentially almost died once. A lot of it depends on how much stronger the heart gets over the next 3 to 6 months. If it doesn't get stronger, unfortunately, you're at risk of suddenly dropping dead.
You talk about heart stress, you mean like that's including like
worry,
anxiety, and all those stuff?
All those things can play a role.
Oh, okay.
The question is, why would a young man like this present with such severe heart disease? weakened heart and a heart attack at such a young age. Basic causes of this sort of disease that we ask questions about are smoking history. He's not a tobacco user. History of diabetes, he doesn't know history of diabetes. Family history of heart problems at a young age, no family history. And one has to wonder whether environmental factors play a role.
In Guai's environment, petrochemical companies release tons of pollutants each year. But these toxins may not be the worst environmental health threat here. Tobacco, liquor, and fast food are easy to find. Fresh produce isn't. Nor is quality housing. Many public places are unsafe.
It's a community that has enormous number of problems. So we see much higher rates of asthma, hospitalization, we see much higher rates of diabetes, lower life expectancy.
When most people think of the causes of chronic disease, for example, cardiovascular disease, they think of individual level risk factors, which we know about: diet, physical activity, smoking. However, it's also true that they are socially patterned. And one of the dimensions across which it's patterned is by neighborhoods. If we look at a map of almost any geographic area, but I'll just use the example of Richmond, California, and you map up rates of obesity, for example, or of hypertension, or of low birth weight, we'll see that these things overlap almost exactly. And if we overlay a map of environmental hazards, it fits in as well. And it's very common to see all these dimensions cluster.
And they cluster in Richmond. The city has higher rates of death from heart disease and cancer than most surrounding communities. Children are hospitalized for asthma at twice the rate of other county neighborhoods. And the risk of dying of diabetes is almost twice as high.
Sometimes we naively think of improving health by simply changing behaviors. But the choices of individuals are often limited by the environments in which they live.
A friend of mine who worked in Richmond said that she's seen 10 or 12 teenage girls now who have had their gallbladders removed. If you eat a lot of fat in your diet, you can get gallbladder disease. And it turned out they're eating virtually breakfast, lunch, and dinner in fast food outlets. And there were no farmers markets, there were no greengrocers, there was no Safeway or supermarket that was reachable by these kids. And fast food is a bargain. You can get 1,500 calories for a couple of bucks. It's not a long-term bargain, but it's a short-term bargain, and people make that trade.
Even short-term bargains can be few and far between.
So there are a lot of those that live around here, those apartments around here. Over 50% people pay more than 30% of their income toward the housing costs. So if you pay more than 30% of your income, you're not in a good situation.
And it's not just housing. According to a Brookings Institution report, buying a car in a low-income neighborhood costs as much as $500 more than in an affluent community. Cashing a check, add up to 10% more. Furniture, appliances, and even groceries are more expensive. Researchers call this the poverty tax.
Until last year, I worked two jobs.
I worked two jobs too before.
My daughter used to say, like, "Mom, stop." She says she doesn't want to see her mom or dad work like that. Now I take this.
We have patients like Y who come in very sick. We patch them up, we save their lives, and send them out back in the same environment.
The calcium, potassium. I could take it 4 o'clock.
I think we sometimes forget that people who live in more well-off communities have a lot of advantages because they do have a lot of the environmental support. well, why are these neighborhoods so different? And of course, these differences are not a natural thing. They arise as a result of policies or the absence of policies that create these enormous spatial inequalities in resources and in the environments that people live.
Sixty years ago, Richmond was a boomtown.
Here was assembled one of the nation's largest industrial armies.
During World War II, the Kaiser shipyards in Richmond ran 24 hours a day. The war effort drew workers of all ethnicities to Richmond. When the war ended, new governmental policies brought sweeping changes to communities like Richmond. As the shipyards closed, thousands of jobs left. So did anyone who could. But only white families could get the new government-backed mortgages to buy homes in the new suburbs. Richmond's population fell by a third.
We had vast public investments in building the suburbs of America. Federally supported loans, FHA loans, went to people who were moving to the suburbs, and for many years, up until the 60s, those loans were available on a racially restricted basis. African Americans and other people of color didn't have access to them.
Until 1962, out of $120 billion in government-backed home loans, less than 2% went to non-white households. In Northern California, between the war and 1960, of 350,000 federally guaranteed new home loans, less than 100 went to black families. In cities like Richmond, African Americans were left behind in increasingly neglected neighborhoods. In the 1980s, poor Latino and Southeast Asian immigrants began joining them in these same neighborhoods.
Once the community starts to go downhill, nobody wants to actually invest in the community, so the banks don't want to come in and the shops don't want to come in. Then you don't have a commercial base, you don't have the community taxes that can then feed back into the schools. Now you don't have good schools, so families don't want to move into the community if they don't have to because you don't have good schools, and you get a sort of vicious cycle of everybody who can will leave the community.
This isn't something that happens overnight, and it isn't the fault of the people who live there. The people who live in below.
Because it is an exclusive right to broadcast this on PBS. So I hope that some members of the audience will stay for the rest of this 30-minute segment. And if there's anybody in the audience or here that wants to see the one on diabetes, we can show that as well. We just can't broadcast it on television. So I think the point that is incredibly well made is social policy affects lives. It affects health, physical health, psychological health. And that's what we're about. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks. Okay, this is going to start April 6th, Sunday, 6 p.m. 6 p.m. to either 6 to 7 or 6 to 6:30. Yeah, nationally, a lot of the other stations are showing it beginning March 27th at 10 o'clock at night. So I think KCET is to be acknowledged for putting it on at 6 o'clock on a Sunday night. Hopefully, more people will watch it on 6 p.m. on a Sunday night, April 6th, beginning of the series, as opposed to Thursday night at 10 o'clock. I know I'm in bed at 10 o'clock. Any other questions on the series?
Thank you very much, Dr. Thomas. We will be showing the DVDs after the meeting. I believe we have the room until about 9 o'clock, so we'll show as much as we can. And so we'll move on quickly so that we can see these. And to the next item on the agenda, which is the health agency budget. Mr. Hamm is here to discuss discuss the list of potential service reductions, service level reductions facing us in this county as regards our department.
Hello again. I think just a brief bit of information about context. We submitted our budget that we call our status quo budget to the CAO's office, County Administrative Office, about a month ago on February 9th. The status quo budget suggests that we would maintain the same level of energy, the same level of effort that we're putting forward in our programs now, same number of employees, same contracts with our community-based organization partners, et cetera. Because our costs go up at a rate which exceeds our departmental revenue, the amount of our allocations from state government for funding for our programs and the amount that we're able to collect from fees, et cetera, actually, fees are actually able to keep pace with costs, but it's really our state funding streams that don't keep pace with costs, with local cost increases. There is a gap, and for us, from this year to next year, that gap was $2.5 million. At the direction of the Board of Supervisors, all county departments had to submit, in addition to their status quo budget, a list of possible service level reductions that would be necessary if the board found that they could only fund our programs next year at the level of general fund support that they're getting this year. So that's why the list that you have in your packet has a running total that gets to $2.5 million and then stops. That was how that number was determined. That's the amount of increase from this year to next year in terms of general fund support to maintain status quo. When all of the budget information was submitted to the CAO's office and they looked at the whole thing, the gap that the county administrator had been predicting could be somewhere between 16 and 23 million settled on around 18 million. There have been a couple special planning sessions that the Board of Supervisors has held in the past couple months. One was January 22, the most recent one was February 19, and at that meeting they spent pretty much the entire day engaged in a dialogue with the public and with the county administrator about how to go about dealing with that problem. And in a nutshell, the board indicated conceptually to the CAO that he should make a recommended budget that includes use of some portion of the county's one-time money. So over the years, we have been able to maintain a general reserve in the general fund. We have managed to set, the county has managed to set operating contingencies at by policy at 5% of the general fund budget, which is about $20 million, 5% of a $400 million general fund budget. And over the years, they've managed to contribute to designated reserves, setting aside money for special things that you might do in your family budget for savings accounts or education accounts for children or grandchildren or whatever. And so the county does, over the last 10 years, has set aside quite a bit of money. And in recognition of the fact that it's very, very hard to cut service levels, makes sense to use some reasonable percentage of those one-time funds to mitigate the depth of the cuts that would otherwise be necessary. So those of us who are in the business of trying to figure out what might happen and respond to questions from employees and groups such as the Health Commission about what might happen, I'm guessing that $18 million might receive somewhere in the vicinity of $4, 5, 6 million of one-time money. Okay, that's just my guess, so hold me to that. That still leaves a gap in operating, and it's still that use of one-time funds to fund operating expenses, which is generally a no-no, but times are difficult. Still leaves a gap of about $12 million. It so happens that that's about the gap that would be bridged by every operating department being funded at their current year's level of general fund support. That would balance the budget. The Board of Supervisors did not say that any operating budgets were off limits as far as what it would take to balance the budget. But the CAL FIRE contract for fire protection services in the unincorporated area, to get down to their current year's level of general fund support would require that a couple of rural fire stations be closed. The sheriff's cut list included 49 positions and would require the elimination of a substantial number of patrol deputies, probably have to shut down a wing of the jail, which meant folks would need to be cited and released, misdemeanors, folks who would otherwise spend some time in jail or whatever. fairly major policy changes on the public safety departments that those of us who have been watching boards of supervisors balance budgets for a long time, it's hard to imagine that they're going to be able to do those kinds of things. So while the public safety budgets have not been set aside, most folks recognize that if they don't make those level of cuts in all departments, that the other departments would have to make up more of what it takes to balance the budget. In recognition of that, the county administrator about a week and a half ago sent out another email to all of the departments indicating that you did a good job coming up with your list that takes us all down to general fund support, but we need more. We need a list of additional service level reductions decisions that the board might have to make if it turns out that they're not going to be able to make across the board cuts. That list isn't due to the county administrative office until day after tomorrow. We're working on it right now. I just wanted to offer that information up because it is the most current information that we have about what's going on with the county's efforts to present, with the staff's efforts to present to the Board of Supervisors, enough information so that in June, in the full public, after full public debate and in a public setting, they'll go about trying to figure out how to balance the budget for 08-09. I've not heard anybody predict that this situation that the county's in terms of its overall financial picture would only last a year. I've heard folks say 2 to 3. I've heard some folks say 2 to 5. So it's not something that, it's not just a little dip that we're going to be able to deal with by breaking our piggy bank and, getting on to the next year. So it's a challenge this county is going to face for this year, certainly going into 09-10, and then, perhaps another year before we start to come out of it. What you have before you is a list that was comprised by my department, the managers, Dr. Baylor on behalf of Behavioral Health Services, Dr. McMillan as a newcomer. Dr. Thomas had some input in helping us come up with the candidate public health service level reductions in their relative order. Drug and Alcohol Services staff, we gathered together in a room and engaged in that very, very uncomfortable process of trying to figure out what order these things needed to be in. And so to the extent that the commission wants to weigh in at all on that question, the relative order of these items, we'd certainly be interested in hearing from you on that. As I think we discussed at length at your strategic planning session some number of months ago, wouldn't be surprised at all to see advocates for continued healthcare services in this community encourage the Board of Supervisors to do everything they can to prevent or avoid these kinds of service level reductions, and the Commission certainly in a position, if it chooses to make that kind of a recommendation. Mental Health Board has been looking at this information. Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board has been looking at this information, and there's folks who have their opinions about the relative value of these things compared to one another. The choice that I did not have, that we did not have as management and the health agency, was to not comply with the direction that we got from the board, which was to come up with the list. So I couldn't say no, I'm not going to do that. Again, as difficult a process as it was. So that's my brief presentation, and I'm certainly happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Are there questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Hetherington? Just so if any community input needs to go to the board, it will be at the June budget hearing. Are there opportunities prior to that, or is that the key date?
Well, that's when they'll be making their decisions. Board can't engage in decision making about the budget outside of a period of time when they get a budget and they open and they present it essentially to the public, and then they have a period of time within which they can deliberate and make decisions on it. Council and the CAO discussed 19th meeting of the Board of Supervisors, you know, with any policy direction that the board might provide to the county administrator at this point, you know, about priorities or any of that kind of stuff. Was that decision-making about the budget? And the answer was no. So that kind of stuff can occur. The real decisions about how to balance the budget aren't going to happen until June. I'm sure folks won't wait until then to share their opinions with board members about the, you know, the relative merits of this thing versus that thing. But
Commissioner Warren?
Was there discussion, like you said, when, say, all the health agency folks got together, in service provision cuts as to rural areas versus circling the wagons around San Luis and pulling all those outlying programs and things out of the rural areas and then concentrating on San Luis? Because my concern is as we look at the demographics in the county, many of our most indigent folks who have the toughest time coming to San Luis for services are in these outlying areas of Napomo and Shandon and Cambria. Was there discussion on that and how people would be impacted?
Short answer is yes. We endeavored to, as accurately as we could, describe what we think from our perspective the implications of each of those candidate service level reductions would be. So I don't know if your reading of it led any of you to conclude that we were sort of SLO-based services were less prone to the possibility of service level reductions than services in the outlying area. We certainly didn't design it that way. I don't feel like that's a characteristic of the list. We really looked at where does the county expend general fund monies at its discretion? Where can we, what choices does the board have? We really can't do much to reduce the cost of the provision of medical care at the jail. We're operating a psychiatric health facility that's taking a considerable amount of general fund support, and there really is not much that we can do about that. There were some instances in which where we said, well, you know, that the first nurse or the first drug and alcohol specialist or whatever, if we have to shrink, and we try to think of it incrementally, you know, where the first one was perhaps doing something in the North County or in the South County, as opposed to something, you know, in a clinic in San Luis Obispo. But we were very cognizant of trying to minimize the impact to our customers, and we know that they're spread all over the county. Does that answer your question?
Well, it does, but one of those was looking at the possible closure of the clinic in Cambria, CHC. And that leaves us with a long way to drive,
yeah,
and affects a lot of people. And that includes elderly that aren't going to have the services to transportation to get to San Luis.
Right. On the issue of possible reductions to our the grant amount in our contract with CHC and how that might manifest itself in clinic closures or service level reductions, we did pass along to the board and to the public the information that we received from CHC management when we said what would happen if the grant had to be reduced in increments, fairly significant dollar amount increments. But it should be pointed out that in our contract, and we're just over halfway through year four of our five-year contract, the language of our contract basically says that if the board finds that it has to reduce the appropriation for that purpose, something below what the appropriation would need to be in order to be in compliance with the contract, if they have to do that, then we have to meet and attempt to reach an agreement on modification to terms in the contract. And so it wouldn't be a one-sided decision-making process. CHC would have to run the proposals past us, and we would endeavor to reach an agreement on them. So we would be very careful in those negotiations about trying to minimize the impact on a regional basis.
Commissioner, I'm sorry. So then would there be, I realize that's because you have a contract with CHC. Now I'm wondering about the smaller communities, say up in San Miguel. that got a even a half-time or full-time contract person out of drug and alcohol services, but that's all that they have in that community for any kind of prevention or treatment. So is there any way that there can be any kind of negotiation on that as to what the agency chose to put on the chopping block versus community need and who would represent the community?
Are you talking about our anything on our list?
No, no, I don't have a specific on this
okay.
one, but I'm just saying because of the poverty level and the fact that there aren't a variety of other services in Chandon or San Miguel, when you pull that kind of a small community, what little community support they have to help develop their own services, it can be a much larger impact on a community than it is when you do it.
Yeah, we're past conceptual discussions, though. That's a, there's a list before you, and it's very specific. And we're down to specific questions of should we do this or should we do this. So, and our responsibility to the board and to the public is to do the best job we can to describe what we think might happen, how the, what the consequences of those service level reductions would be. And we don't want to overlook any possible consequence of those decisions.
Okay, well, I do know that that was brought up at the last Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board meeting by a North County citizen on because they were talking about pulling a youth treatment services person from the North County. And so there was some citizen discussion, but it just kind of...
Well, there, as you'll see on the list, there are some very specific. I mean, there are some staffing reductions that we say, well, this is an Atascadero drug and alcohol clinic position serving the residents of the North County. And you can't shrink the size of your staff to the extent that we'd be required to come up with $2.5 or more $1 million of reduced general fund support without shrinking. You can't exempt any portion of the county from the impact of that. Just try and minimize it to the extent that we can. And it's not possible to do it without impacting the community. Or it would be easy.
Commissioner Donnelly and then Commissioner Horn.
I have several questions. One, just to kind of help me be clear, because I'm kind of new to this, kind of what I understood for you to say. What I wanted to find out was... So if everything, all the levels of reduction on this list are put in place, that gets us to our status quo budget for the health agency?
The general fund support, what we call general fund support budget, it's the same level of general, it would be the same level of general fund support last year that we have this year.
Okay. And then they're telling you that you're going to have to even go beyond this.
So they've asked for a longer list because there's, it's unlikely of the county administrator that the board is going to make cuts in an the board of supervisors is going to make cuts in an across the board fashion. So if they will be deciding, can we close a fire station? If a majority of the board members say no, then Cal Fire can't be brought down to general fund support, and that means that some other department would have to go past general fund support. And so all departments, except for those public safety departments, were asked to write up a longer list so that they'll, so initially the board of county administrators and his staff, and then ultimately the board will have the information that they need to make those difficult decisions.
And then in terms of prioritizing, one of the questions that I had about that, because some of the things I noticed is that this is an order of priority, is that correct?
Yeah, with the least unacceptable at the top.
At the top.
Level of pain or it gets harder. The further down you the list you go, the harder it is, generally. That's what it means.
Okay.
You don't want to be on the top half of the list. It's presumed that those decisions will be made more easily than the further down you go, the greater the impact.
And then, so my question is, because one of the things that I kind of noticed on here is that some of the things are further down the list, but aren't as, I would say, health critical. Like the elimination of a supervisor, a clerk position. And so that's a question that I had just in terms of prioritizing for that list. It just seems that there are certain things on this list, at least in my mind, that would be more health
top of the list, three or four of those kinds of positions. We're also mindful of our need to continue to be efficient and effective even as we shrink. And so while we did take that into consideration, and I'm not suggesting that everybody will agree with the order that we put the items in, we don't all agree internally with the order we put them in. We were mindful of that.
Commissioner Hetherington? Commissioner Horn has her question now.
Jeff, part of the closing of General Hospital was certain things had to be in place, including, I think, the ombudsman position that you're showing as one that could be eliminated. How do you reconcile that with the covenant from the board when they closed General and farmed out the clinic?
Well, if the board thinks that's a bad idea, then they won't reduce that $50,000. And that's not a flip response. The work that that Mary's been doing very, very competently for the community since the decision in 03 to close the inpatient facility and then in 04 to switch over from family care center clinics to CHC clinics has been, I would say, almost exclusively around patients and the accessibility of primary care services. So while you and I know back from the day when it was something that we imagined we would have to assure the community and the public and ourselves that when we closed General Hospital and went to contracts with the other four hospitals, that some of those horror stories that we had heard over the years about people being denied access to emergency room services or to admission in hospitals would not be the case. And that was the original thought process behind the need for an ombudsman position. Today, it exists, again, almost exclusively to facilitate patient needs relative to the primary care system. And it's a very good thing. It's great service that she provides. I know you guys have been complimentary of the work that she does. It was not an easy decision to put that on the list.
I guess my concern is that, you know, you're saying we're in the fourth year of a fifth-year contract with CHC. We have to also realize that their expenses aren't going down. But you're going to start negotiating their contract at some point after that fifth year. And I'm afraid that those, you know, budget woes that we're feeling right now are going to have a very negative impact on, you know, what we promised the citizens of this community was going to be accessible to them through CHC and the closing of the hospital. So I guess I'm sending up a warning flag right now that I don't want to see those kind of cuts that are going to leave the public without some recourse or some person to help them navigate a system that is going to be under attack going forward. And that's my concern.
Are there
any,
Commissioner Warren?
I'd like to know along those same lines what Pam was talking about is what effect do you see CenCal having in the provision of services that may lighten the load for our ombudsman, or is it going to increase it, or what are we looking at?
Well, one of the differences between a Medi-Cal managed care, a county organized health system model that we have put in place now, and we're in the second week, is they do have a fairly well-developed member services function. And so for the Medi-Cal beneficiary among CHC's clientele, there will be a department of folks who will be performing the same kind of services that Mary has been providing so competently for us under our contract. That doesn't address the need as it relates to unsponsored individuals. And the very significant portion of the growth that's occurred in the number of outpatient clinic visits over the years that we've had CHC's contract in effect has been in unsponsored self-pay and sliding fee scale eligible unsponsored persons. I mean, the CMSP population has grown almost not at all. I mean, it basically has been flat through the first 4.5 years. The Medi-Cal population and number of unsponsored visits a year have increased dramatically. And so while I do think for the Medi-Cal beneficiaries, CenCal Health is going to fill that gap that might exist, you know, with the elimination of the ombudsman program, there still is that challenge for the unsponsored patients.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hamm. Is there any public comment on this subject? Please state your name for the record.
Yes, hi. Dr. Greg Thomas, and this is a pleasure to be able to come and give public comment, not as a member of staff. I will say that as a former member of staff, that the list that was discussed prior to my departure is painful. It is extremely painful, and Commissioner Hetherington has brought up one issue, the ombudsman, and weighing where do you put the ombudsman versus ocean water monitoring program? Where do you put it in relation to having a tuberculosis control nurse? Where do you put it in relation to offering flu vaccine to seniors? These are all painful choices. And as it was discussed, the budget process, the public decisions that will be made in June will be in a public venue. But there are a lot of the decisions that will be made internally by County Administrative Office in terms of what is recommended in the budget book, and that will be happening in the next, Jeff, in the next month, during April, County Administrative Office will be taking all of the departmental budgets and cuts and more cuts that have been provided and weighing them. So this is a time to speak and speak as loudly as you can.
Thank you for your comments. All right, then, we'll move on to the next item of business, which is Dr. Thomas's wish list of 7 items. And Mr. Hamm is also here to lead the discussion on that item.
Very briefly, you guys have the copy that says maybe they are a bit hopeful underneath? You expressed some interest last month in putting this on the agenda and giving yourselves an opportunity to discuss it, and so we certainly want to facilitate that. I just wanted to point out that of these 7 items, in my mind, they can be sorted into things that are resource kind of limitation-based things. The first one, putting more effort and funding into primary prevention, I mean, that's simple. That is a resource constraint-based topic. Relative priorities, of course. Universal health insurance, outpatient detox, medically fragile homeless services. Those are examples of services that I think the community recognizes are, we could be doing a better job. But they really are, the thing that's keeping us perhaps from doing a better job, I don't know, besides hopefully we're coordinating efficiently with one another, we're communicating effectively, we're collaborating, we're doing all those D words. Ultimately, it's cash. That's keeping us from being able to. I mean, the Nunez's healthcare reform proposal that made it all the way to the Senate Health Committee and failed. All of the members of the Senate who indicated that they couldn't support it said, "I can't support, coincidentally, a $14 billion improvement in access to healthcare for Californians at the same time we have a $16 billion gap in the budget." There were other problems. Not all stakeholders were thrilled with that bill. But it essentially went down in flames at the end as a principally because of lack of resources. There are a couple of the other issues that are around jurisdiction and the extent to which it is something within the county's jurisdiction or the extent of our influence over them versus the influence of the state government or federal government ever. They're not so much resource constraint issues as they are policy questions. The number 2 bullet on Dr. Thomas's list here, realization that economics and minimum wage are highly associated with health status. Same thing as the movie. That's a policy question as opposed to, it's a complex issue, but it falls on in my mind onto a sort of by trying to sort these things into a question of policy. So those were the only comments that I wanted to share relative to Greg's list. I don't know if you want to ask him any questions about it or not, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak to it.
Since he was brave enough to stay around for the list, we might as well have you see if there are any commissioners that would like to ask you questions. Are there any commissioners that would like to ask Dr. Thomas questions? Commissioner Horn.
I'd like to talk about your very last point, labeling of GMO foods. Since that's not in the purview of the county or the state, but it's a federal purview, how would you expect anything to be done with that?
Well, I think it's important to put a context. This is Greg Thomas again, by the way. Put a context of my wish list of 7 items that I think would be good for the health of this community. And they are parting comments. They were asked as, what's your wish list of things that we could do to make this a healthier community? And as Jeff Hamm has so eloquently said, these are resource issues to a large extent. Maybe we've got to raise taxes. Maybe we've got to take, on a state level, the yacht tax that people don't have to pay on their multi-million dollar yachts, as long as they keep them out of the state for 3 months, I think, and then bring them in, then they don't have to pay any taxes on those large investments. There are local revenue enhancement things that I think Mr. Seebach, the county auditor controller, has suggested to raise some local funds. And I would hope that if we raise some local funds that we could put into some of these issues. They're not all pure health issues. And I recognize a lot of them are state or other purview. I think that the Health Commission, the Board of Supervisors, can make statements that mean something. And I think that if the Board of Supervisors spoke to the state and the federal government, the state and the federal government are fighting over EPA guidelines on clean air, on who has jurisdiction. And I think that the more that, say, health policy issues that need to be tackled, irregardless of jurisdiction, if they say, we believe that this should happen, doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight, but on GMO labeling, I'll be very truthful. I don't put this at the top of my list. There are other issues that are more important in terms of the lives of individuals. I think people have a right to know what they're eating. They have a right to know how much fat they're eating, how much saturated fat they're eating, how many calories they're eating. They have the right to know whether they're eating GMO foods or not. So I think that's a pretty easy policy direction, and from my point of view, I don't think any harm is done trying to get the Board of Supervisors and the state legislature to request that and advocate for that. So that's where that's coming from. And yes, these are wish lists, assuming that status quo is present, and status quo is not currently present. So if I had to put these all in perspective, where do I put these in relation to, do I put these over, maintaining a restaurant inspection program so that the food that you eat in restaurants is safe? Well, I'd have to redo all those priorities. This was just, hey, sky's the limit. I get to say what I think would improve the health of this community, and I was tired after 15 years of trying to do things to improve the health that are limited by the resources available.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Well, I, for one, wouldn't change a thing on your list, Dr. Thomas, because I think we're already working in some of these areas. I mean, outpatient detox, this group of people have always been in favor of that, and we're working towards that, both on a legislative level and supporting those programs. The same with the program for the medically fragile homeless. I mean, those things are in their infant stages right now, and they're going to be constrained by budgets. I understand that. But I certainly wouldn't take them off the table because they're so important in our community, as is the labeling of GMO foods. So I would hold this list in high regard in our deliberations going forward. And when we see, you know, things at the legislative level that we can embrace that are on this list, I think we're more powerful for that. So I would recommend that we keep these in our forefront, you know, as far as what we're looking for in making comments, supporting, because there isn't one thing on here that I think in some way, shape, or form that we haven't been involved in and championed at some point.
I'll make one more comment. I'm proud to see that in the bad cuts that we might have to take, the obesity prevention staff and resources are still there. They have not been, they're not on the cut list. And I think that that shows that the public health department and the health agency as a whole is pushing strongly to make forays into this. There was a recent, Joel Derringer came to the Board of Supervisors because I think there was a California Healthcare Association, there was a poll that was done of people in California, and the majority, large majority, felt that obesity was a huge problem that the state is facing, and that they expected the policymakers, the Board of Supervisors, and the people in the state legislature to do more for obesity, not less. Obesity prevention.
Commissioner Donnelly?
And I just wanted to add, too, I definitely agree to keep this list, and there's elements of some of these things that, number one, you can get other sources of funding, not just the county funds. I mean, there's grants available and things like that, so don't lose sight that there are other sources of funding that can be searched out and sought out for some of these things, and that there's other work that can be done, such as I was thinking, you know, just the fluoridation of the water. There's work that can be done on that outside of the funding, little elements of it, whether it's, you know, starting our, having our community education committee start to work on, you know, educating people in the community or doctors about, I think that there's a lot of parents that don't even know that where they live, that the water's not fluoridated, and starting to do things from the grassroots up. So it's not necessarily, I mean, these things aren't lost causes, and we can still be working on them now. So that was it.
And Commissioner Heatherington, go right ahead. I was going to make a motion that we have a roll call vote on accepting these seven and keeping them, you know, in our purview. There is a motion on the floor that we keep this. Keep this list as a goal, as our goal.
Keep this list
as our goal.
As goal,
and for consideration in future. For consideration in future agenda items or support at legislative level.
Okay. Have you got all that, Dave?
Don't ask me to repeat. And legislative platforms and consolidation of programs, or I don't, I mean, it could go in very many different directions.
Okay, well,
goals for consideration of further activities of the health commission. How does that work?
That's a little shorter.
Thank you, Mary.
Okay.
All right. Well, we have a motion, and we have a second by Commissioner O'Dell. Is there discussion on the item? Commissioner
that we'll continue to look at it and continue to discuss it.
I agree with that.
Yes, Mr. Arnold? Well, you certainly can comment on the item, but I think we can move ahead with the motion. Yeah. Yeah, no, you'll be able to comment. Oh, sure. Okay. Is there any other discussion of the motion? There being no further discussion, did you call for a roll call vote?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. There will be a roll call vote. And would you please read the motion again?
Keep the list of seven as our goals in further activities of the Health Commission, for the Health Commission? That's right. Is that clear? We're not quite there.
For further consideration of activities of the and discussion at the Health Commission. Let's add that and discussion.
For further activities and discussion, Health Commission?
Of the Health Commission, because that would cover then if we were wanted to do an educational program, for instance, that would be an activity. All right, then. I guess we're ready for the roll call.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Dell?
Yes.
Commissioner Warren?
Yes.
Commissioner Donnelly?
Yes.
Commissioner Horn?
Yes.
Commissioner Shemusa?
Yes.
Commissioner Tilsher?
Yeah.
And Chair Ash?
Yes.
All eight in favor?
Therefore, the motion has passed unanimously. Is there anything further on the program of this subject, or are we ready to open it for public comment? Here's we're ready to open it for public comment. Please step forward, state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Daniela Arnon, and I live in Los Osos. And I think that Dr. Thomas's list is a beautiful list, and I'm really happy that you will continue to do good work with these wonderful ideas. And there's one that I have a lot of concern about. Well, but I would like to say that perhaps this is not the one I mainly want to talk about. But
may I interrupt you just for a moment? I'm having a little problem with the timer here.
Okay.
So it's at 9. It started at 10 minutes when you spoke, so, and now I'm taking a little of, oh, no, there it is at 3. Okay,
okay.
Good. All right, go ahead and start
thank
over.
Thank you. I'm Daniela Arnon from Los Osos. Perhaps an easy way to label GMOs would be to have a little sticky thing, and that might be an easiest way if we did at some point implement it. And you probably know the Board of Supervisors in Santa Cruz has banned GMOs until they can be proven safe, because there are many, many issues all over the world. There are some pretty big scares, and there's an increase in allergies in soy, and maybe we could find out if indeed GMO soy produces, people are more allergic to those things. So I just thought that. And also, would hope to include milk and meat from cloned animals. Maybe we could label those as well. A lot of people don't know that fluoride is a really bad toxin, and there are many countries and cities that have banned the use of fluoridation. And I'll give you each a copy of this, who will be the keepers of the well. Former president of the American Medical Association, Dr. Charles Gordon Hyde, said, "I'm appalled at the prospect of using water as a vehicle for drugs. Fluoride is a corrosive poison that will produce serious effects on a long-range basis. Any attempt to use this water this way is deplorable." And another quote, Davis has banned water fluoridation. Santa Cruz has banned water fluoridation. Germany, Belgium, Austria, Hungary, the Netherlands, Denmark. Towns in New York, North Carolina, Massachusetts. Davis, California had its fifth rejection of water fluoridation in 1990. So there's a lot of good information here. Also, there's www.keepersofthewell.org, www.fluoridealert.org, and www.earthisland.org for more information. So let's educate ourselves. Thank you so much. And I have a copy for anyone here else here who would like one.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please state your name for the record.
I'm Courtney Coleman. I live here in San Luis Obispo. And I go to people's homes and teach them how to cook with whole foods, whole organic foods. I've heard a lot of bad things about genetically modified foods, that there's actually pesticides in the plant fibers of the soy, so that when the bugs eat it, they get the pesticides from eating the plant, so that farmers don't have to spray. With organic crops that are planted near large commercial farms, there's cross-pollination that occurs, that then those plant genes get into the organic ones, and you can't really tell the difference. I think that by labeling GE foods, it would help reduce the amount of them being used by industry and corporations and big, you know, commercial food producers. And I think Daniela's idea about having a little sticker, really, I never thought of that before, but that, I think that's really important. I remember there was a lot of protests that went on in front of Trader Joe's like 8 years ago when this issue was at the fore back then, and people were protesting Trader Joe's for not labeling. I think it's important for many reasons, and those are just a couple of them that I know of off the top of my head. And I wondered if it would be okay if I spoke about another issue on this list of this wish list of seven.
Yes, go right ahead.
Universal health care, I think, right? Are you going to talk about that?
It's on the list, yes.
I know that I'm lucky. I'm 30 years old, and I have no preceding health issues. So I pay $60 a month to have major medical coverage, which could be a lot of money for me if my clientele fell below a certain point. Luckily. And I know that probably my health insurance would be one of the first things to go in my personal budget. You know, if that would have happened if I would have fallen below a certain income level. Trying to help establish a universal health care system just in our county, if you have any influence in that arena, would be such a gallant step. You know what I mean? Like, to be a voice for that is so important, because people are dying because they can't afford it. You know, doctors, pharmaceutical companies are kind of having such an influence in, you know, having medicine cost so much. And up there, people right now can't even hardly afford gas, a lot of people I know anyway, that are below a certain income level. So our world is getting harder and harder to live in, and I think that healthcare should be available to everyone, no matter what. Thanks.
Thank you for your comment. Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Chairman Ans and members of the Commission. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I want to thank Dr. Thomas for speaking tonight. And I do think we need to keep these before us as a set of goals. We know we're not going to get universal health care tomorrow, but we need to have it on the list of things to do, important things to do. And as far as the labeling of GE, that was sent to this commission, I believe, by the Board of Supervisors as something to look into. We have labeling by Davila Valley Barn. To not support it at this level is, in effect, telling the Avila Valley Barn, we don't want you to label. Go back where you were and pretend there isn't any GE. Let's be realistic and go ahead. And I know the supervisors don't have the federal authority to require labeling, but they could ask people to follow the good example of the Avila Valley Barn and voluntarily label. So thanks again, Dr. Thomas, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Is there anyone else? Please step forward and state your name.
I'm Dr. Nancy Reinstein. I have a PhD in nutrition, and I was totally thrilled that Dr. Thomas mentioned GE in his obesity goes, it's very interesting because when I was in school many years ago, obesity wasn't even considered a risk factor. It was thought that, you know, obesity isn't a problem. And now we know it is a major, major problem. And a lot of problems, a lot of things that in those days were not problems are major problems now. I mean, even things like pancreatic cancer, diabetes, you know, we're seeing in children, in adolescents, we're having many, many more problems than we did years ago. And then Danielle asked me to mention that that Nunes's bill, she said there were problems with it, but SB 840 by Representative Sheila Cavell and SB 840, the universal health care bill, passed in both houses, but it was vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else? Then that will close that agenda item, and we'll move to the next one, which is the Pesticide Task Force. I believe the grand jury report stated that it was to be reconvened within.
They actually recommended that we do it every year. And I think the discussion at the Health Commission level was that 3 years was enough time, and we're now on the fourth year, so I think we're a little bit behind.
Take it away, Commissioner Heather.
The final report in 2004 had a happy ending. I'm happy to report. I think what started the pesticide use task force in the late 90s was exposure incidences and the Health Commission's willingness to find out what was going on in the community as far as what the practices were by the County Agricultural Commissioner, what the state and federal laws were, what types of pesticides were being used, how they're being administered, how they're regulated, what happens when somebody is exposed. And through 1997 through 2004, the task force has come forward with some solid recommendations that the ag community and the Agricultural Commissioner's Office have embraced, as well as the Health Commission. They've all been not very big items, but small items just about training doctors in the recognition of pesticide-related illnesses. We were fortunate 10 years ago to have experts come into the community on a collaborative basis with all different organizations, both nonprofit, the county, the Ag Commissioner's Office, and the medical community came together to learn what exposure looked like. So we've had some good recommendations, and what the task force had decided over time was that revisiting the subject every 3 years would kind of give us an overview of what's happening. Generally, how we've approached this in the past is we take a look at the complaint logs at the Ag Commissioner's Office, see if there's anything happening that, you know, is repetitive or, you know, somebody's not being heard, they're, you know, complaining over and over again. Talking to the Ag Commissioner's Office to see if some of the recommendations that have been put in place previously are still on the table. When was the last time our physicians in the community had an opportunity to be trained? 10 years ago, as far as I know. So those are the things that we would look for if we decide to reconvene the task force. So, like I said, the grand jury wanted us to do it annually. I think Dr. Thomas had brought the item to us before, and we decided that every 3 years was enough. And we're a year over, so it's up to you all to decide what we want to do.
Do we need a motion to reconvene this task force, Commissioner Hetherington? I would entertain a motion to reconvene the pesticide task force.
The only problem that I think the only people left here on that task force is Pam and I, and out of the commission, and then we had various representatives at large, so both from the community and from representing the Farm Bureau and things like that. But we're the only one. What I would suggest that Pam and I go over this, the preliminary, and if there are significant things that we find out, then to set up and reconvene a whole task force. because I think we could do a study of it and determine if what's happened, and then recommend to the commission what we think should happen.
Are you agreeable to do that?
Okay, well, I don't think we need a motion to do that. That's more like committee work. And so Commissioner Hetherington and Commissioner O'Dell will investigate incidents in the county and determine or make a recommendation. What? Yes, at the next meeting or a couple meetings from now?
A couple months. We're
okay. Okay, 2 to 3 months. We will hear from Commissioner Hetherington and Commissioner O'Dell in their sort of ad hoc pesticide task force meeting. Anything else from Commissioner? Okay. Is there any public comment regarding this item?
Yes, I would just, Jesse Arnold again. I would just hope the group could check on how many acres are still using methyl bromide. It's been continuing efforts to ban that substance because it destroys the ozone, and of course it's very toxic to people, and they keep coming up with exceptions. So I'd like to know how many acres they're still using and why we're not getting that substance banned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for your comment. Is that it from the public? Commissioner O'Dell?
I on going back to another subject that on the items of the list we have here of cuts, and I mean, our proposed things, priority list. I missed the last meeting, so is there something in process that the commission is doing to review this and to then come back to the commission? Is there something going on that I don't know?
I believe that we had left it that the legislative committee, we were waiting to see what the list was, and so we knew what we were dealing with. And then I believe that the legislative committee was, am I wrong, planning to meet? They are planning to meet to discuss the next plan of action as regards these budget cuts. We've established that lobbying is okay.
Okay.
Let's lobby where it's effective and when.
And it should be back to our April meeting so we can have
no doubt
opportunity.
Well, this,
and also there's a new list. 10% or so below this that Jeff Hamm talked about,
right,
that they will have in a couple of days.
Well, yeah, well, and we will put it on the agenda next meeting.
Thank you.
You wanted to comment?
Yes, on the pesticide task force.
Yes,
my name is Janice Campbell, and I'm a deputy commissioner from the San Luis Obispo County Ag Commissioner's Office. And I participated on the pesticide task force, and I'm really pleased to hear that Pam and Commissioner O'Dell would be willing to kind of screen things before we go forward, because as you know, many of the departments, including ours, will be looking at serious budget issues, and we're going to need to really prioritize our time, and we really want to stick with the priorities of, you know, protecting the county from misuse of pesticides. And while outreach is really important, we'd like to focus on dealing with complaints and issues that are currently happening. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. There being no further comments on this subject, we will move on quickly now to the Health Commission update. The chair update, I gave you my report on the obesity task force or the community resource. The task force had been rolled into Heal Flow. Also, I attended the START Advisory Board meeting this month. They are moving forward slowly. They are in the new health campus. They are moving forward in getting their new equipment for the interview rooms. They have some grant money for that now, and they are hoping to move forward with their interview room at the START Center, which is at the hospital. They are close to getting their translation services program started. They will be soliciting volunteers for word-for-word translations, and those people will, of course, be carefully screened. And I think I may have mentioned this at the last meeting, but I'm not sure that Dr. Abdul Khan Cotter is now the medical director. She has taken Dr. Thomas's place. Deborah is retiring at the end of this year, and they are still recruiting nurses. So please, anybody listening, if you have any interest in becoming a member of the SART team, please do contact SART at the county. That is the end of my report, and let's see, we'll move on now to Legislative Committee.
Nothing. No update.
Oh, I skipped the commissioner update part, didn't I? I'm sorry. Let's do the commissioner update, and we've already had the legislative update. Let's start at my left. Commissioner Telscher?
No update.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Preventive health grant and community-based organization grant review with Commissioner O'Dell going quite swimmingly.
It's probably taking a lot of your time at this point.
At this time of year it does, yeah. But the rest of the year it doesn't.
Okay. Commissioner Shimuzas?
I don't have any updates.
Commissioner Horn?
I don't have any reports.
Commissioner Donnelly?
No report.
Commissioner O'Dell?
Only to report that the Mental Health Board is going through the same painful thing with the reduction, proposed reduction, and they are in the same thing of reviewing it and then become lobbyists or advocates.
Thank you. Commissioner Warren?
Yes, the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board is doing the same thing also and looking at cuts and having a lot of discussion around that. At the same time, each of the board members has taken on the assignment of learning in depth about the various programs the Drug and Alcohol Services provide so that they can kind of provide an update and report back to the organization, to the advisory board each time, and they seem to be enjoying that process. And to let the public know, I believe there's a couple positions that will be open on that Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board, so if people are interested in applying, they could contact them.
Thank you. So we'll continue with the committee report. Does Community Education have a report?
No, and I apologize that we haven't had a meeting either. I think where we left it last was going back out into the community with surveys to see how people are faring as far as access, you know, if they're having any problems. That would entail each commissioner taking a farmer's market in their community. I would be happy to email Jean with a list of those and resurrect the old survey. I would not think that we would need to change it. It deals with access, availability of services for people in the community. So that's my off-the-cuff recommendation for next month for public health.
Was it in your mind that we would go to a farmer's market and assemble these surveys prior to the next month's meeting? Is that what you mean, and then have a report?
No, I'll probably hand out the surveys at next month's meeting and then have each commissioner in the month of April hit their local farmer's market. It wouldn't be quote-unquote public health week, but it would be public health month activity, I guess.
Okay. Then we'll be sure to have that on the agenda next month. Okay, does the Budget Committee have a report?
There's no Budget Committee report.
The Nominating Committee Chair, Jan Hicks, is not here tonight because she has to be at work unexpectedly, but I have a report from her that we are now in the process of recruiting for alternates in all three areas. And I believe Gina and I just talked today about the ad is going out in the paper. The application period will be over on the 18th of April. So hopefully by then all applications will be received. The interviews will start at the beginning of May, and then commissioners will take office as of July 1st. So that is the Nominating Committee report. Now, prospective future items, we have Commissioner Hetherington's suggestion, which we can have next month. Is there anything else that commissioners at this point want to have? have input for next month. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that we should spend some time on that, no doubt. But anything else to do with Public Health Week? Is there any other?
I just wanted to kind of poll the rest of the commissioners to see if any of you would want to participate in the discussion with the legislative committee. I know it's a big chunk of information for just four folks to discuss. I have some questions about in terms of process and input. If you would like to participate in that, what I was thinking is having Jean coordinate the meeting and then email it to all of the commissioners when and where that will be, and kind of open it to the rest of the commission if that's all right.
Would that be appropriate to be a joint budget and legislative committee meeting? Is that, Mr. Hamm, would you care to direct us on that?
It's entirely within your purview if you want to do that. I mean, the budget this year and next are so significant in terms of the process that, I mean, I'm not sure what a budget committee's role might be, and if it's going to be something that we monthly report to the full commission on, there is obviously a significant connection between legislative development and our financial situation, so it makes sense.
All right, so we will look forward to hearing via email on a joint budget and legislative committee meeting that we can. We are naturally always our committee meetings are available to attend if you want to, all of them. Okay. Well, I think we're pretty well squared away for next month, and there being no further business, I would entertain a motion for adjournment, and then we can watch the movie.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. There being no objection, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.